Hey everyone, I'm excited to announce that you can now support me and my work on patreon.com/latinamericaneo or by visiting my website and clicking on the Patreon tab. You'll receive benefits for your support through additional resources aside from my free ones like early access to my episodes, the full financial guides related to my most recent episode, the financial tools that could benefit you like Excel sheets and online resources to help you budget and bring down your debt, stock market posts regarding companies I'm currently looking at, and my overall thought process, which is not financial advice. And of course, time with me to help you to the best of my knowledge with any question that you might have. The content will, of course, be in both English and Spanish. Thank you in advance for your generous support. And with that, let's get today's episode started. In this episode, I'll be covering the link between politics and economics through examining the influence that money has in political life. As immigrants, I believe it's important to know this relationship to better understand how our lives in the United States are constantly shaped by it. Whether we like it or not, as immigrants, we are affected by public policy. Politicians create these policies that impact our lives. Politicians spend a lot of time fundraising for their campaigns. Most of this time, involves donor outreach. I'm Kevin Munoz, this is the Leo Podcast, and today is Monday, May 17th. People have always given to politics, but the term I want to go over today is what's known as super PACs. There's a great video on YouTube that you can watch on the Forbes YouTube page that explains it well. To echo the words of Chi-Sun Lee, the deputy director of the Brennan Center's election reform program, super PACs have really enabled the supercharging of giving by the extreme wealthy. A super PAC is a legal vehicle for people or businesses both to pool their wealth to spend on electoral politics through things that you might be familiar with like television, advertisement, and radio ads. They are creatures of a Supreme Court decision from 2010 called Citizens United. The difference between a super PAC and a regular political action committee are the promise that a super PAC's founders make, that its activity is going to be independent of any candidate, and by saying that it's going to operate independently, frees it from legal contribution limits and legal spending limits so that it can raise as much as it wants to from any American donor or business and spend as much as it wants to on elections. In Chi-Sun Lee's opinion, super PAC donors support super PACs because they are a very powerful way to exert influence over elections without any limit. They might defend themselves by stating that they believe that the super PACs they donate to are operating independently of candidate campaigns, so how could they be exerting influence over whoever is elected to office next? But on federal elections alone, super PACs have spent $3 billion since 2010. In the 2018 federal midterms, when we heard a lot about the small donor boom, when you look at the numbers and you take into account giving and spending through federal super PACs, you saw that just 3,500 big donors who gave $100,000 or more each outspent all 7 million small donors who give $200 or less combined. Chi-Sun Lee goes on to say how much of a distressing thing this is. In a democracy where you have so few people able to outweigh the influence of 7 million small donors. So what's being done about this? Well, the House of Representatives in 2019 passed H.R. 1, also known as the For the People Act, and a major component of this would create a small donor public financing system where candidates who opted in and agreed to lower contribution limits would have a small donor money contributed to them multiplied by public funds. What this means is that HR 1 would create the public funds for small donor matching by taking penalties paid by corporate fraudsters found guilty in court or settling accusations of corporate misconduct. The transparency that the Supreme Court majority imagined simply doesn't work that way in real life, and the Supreme Court needs to see how harmful it is in a democracy where all political voices are supposed to be equal to have these vehicles that enable a very, very small, super wealthy few to be able to have so much influence in our elections. As mentioned previously, the H.R. 1 Act was originally introduced by John Sarbanes on January 3, 2019, on behalf of the newly elected Democratic majority in the United States House of Representatives. The House passed the bill on March 8, 2019, by a party line vote of 234 to 193. The bill was viewed as a signature piece of legislation from the Democratic House majority. After the House passed the bill in 2019, it was blocked from receiving a vote by the Republican-controlled Senate under Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Now, in 2021, in the 117th Congress, congressional Democrats reintroduced the act as H.R. 1 and S-1 on March 3, 2021. The bill passed the House of Representatives on a near party line vote of 220 to 210, advancing to the Senate, which is split 50-50 between Democrats and Republicans, with Democratic Vice President Kamala Harris holding the tie-breaking vote. Senate Republicans can block the bill from proceeding to a vote with a filibuster. Some Senate Democrats have expressed support for abolishing the filibuster as a result, but others in their caucus oppose or have expressed reservations about doing so. This bill addresses voter access, election integrity and security, campaign finance, and ethics for the three branches of government. Specifically, this bill expands voter registration, which means automatic and same-day registration, and voting access, which is vote by mail and early voting. It also limits removing voters from voter rolls. You know, basic voting rights. Further, the bill addresses campaign finance, including by expanding the prohibition on campaign spending by foreign nationals, requiring additional disclosure of campaign-related fundraising and spending, requiring additional disclaimers regarding certain political advertising, and establishing an alternative campaign funding system for certain federal offices. Traditional PACs, often used by corporations to curry favor with lawmakers, are losing relative influence. They account for an all-time low 5% of giving. That's because the PAC contribution limit of $5,000 hasn't increased in decades, and corporate PACs have become toxic to some Democrats. At this point, in the 2016 election cycle, independent expenditures totaled roughly $1.3 billion. The 2020 election has seen roughly double that amount. Outside spending by super PACs, political parties, and dark money groups, among others, totals $2.6 billion. That's nearly double the amount spent at this point in the 2016 election cycle. Super PACs account for 63% of all outside spending, while spending by groups that don't disclose their donors is down to just 4%. That doesn't mean dark money is going away. Instead, these groups are funneling money to closely tied super PACs. Future Forward, a relatively new hybrid PAC that has spent $106 million to back Biden, got $33 million from dark money groups. The Mitch McConnell Aligned Senate Leadership Fund has received nearly $63 million from its allied dark money group, One Nation. This phenomenon means spending by groups that only partially disclose their sources of funding is at record highs. Meanwhile, dark money spending is down, but undisclosed funds are making their way into super PACs. Only 30% of outside spending in 2020 has come from groups that fully disclosed their donors, an all-time low. While Biden's campaign was partly powered by small donors, it was also boosted by Wall Street donors. The securities and investment industry has given $74 million to Biden's campaign and allied super PACs, compared to $18 million for Trump's re-election effort. With the system set up the way it is, can we even blame our candidates? The fact is, it's a lot more efficient to court one $10,000 donation from a wealthy donor in their living room than a $1,010 donations from average voters during their busy workdays. Knowing this, politicians spend their time wooing wealthy potential donors, not average voters. Therein lies another problem with money in politics. Politicians become dependent on a minuscule, unrepresentative group of society in order to get elected. And as a result, they legislate in response to those donors' needs, often at the expense of regular people. These mega donors are relatively homogeneous. They're 75% male, likely to work in finance, and nearly all live in major metropolitan areas. Of course, they're also incredibly wealthy. That such a small group holds such outsized influence with public officials is concerning because it sets up the potential for conflicts of interest between the public good and those charged with keeping it. In America, money and politics feeds a vicious cycle. Rising campaign costs, decreasing electoral competition, increased political reliance on a small portion of society that eats away at the clout of the average voter. The winners of this phenomenon are clear, as are the losers. Politicians get to hold on to their seats. Wealthy donors get to keep influencing public policy to their own benefit. The rest of us, however, find ourselves increasingly alienated from the political sphere. And that is the real problem with money and politics. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, please give it 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and a follow on Spotify. It helps me tremendously in order to bring more awareness and educational resources to our community. For more information and to stay up to date with what I'm doing, you can follow me on Instagram at LatinAmericaNeo. And if you need more information and resources, you can visit my website, LatinAmericaNeo.org. I'm Kevin Munoz. This has been the Leo Podcast, and I'll see you next time. This podcast is not investment advice, and I am not a qualified licensed investment advisor. All information on here, including any ideas, opinions, views, predictions, forecasts, commentaries, suggestions, or stock picks expressed or implied are for informational, entertainment, or educational purposes only, and should not be construed as personal investment advice. Conduct your own due diligence or consult a licensed financial advisor or broker before making any and all investment decisions. Any investments, trades, speculations, or decisions made on the basis of any information found on this podcast, expressed or implied, are committed at your own risk, financial or otherwise.